So we are holding on. We are holding on Chaf Zayin Amud Bey's last line. Okay, we were discussing as follows. The Mishnah had said that you're allowed to buy any kind of food with Ma'aseh Sheni money. Well, the Mishnah had started by saying that you're allowed to make an Eruv with any kind of food except for water or salt. We discussed, does that mean, everybody agrees, that means Eruv Chatzeres. Rashi's, everybody agrees it means Eruv Tchumen. Rashi says it also means Eruv Chatzeres. Tosfos disagrees with him on that. Anyway, then we also digress to mention a couple of other dinim that apply where water and salt are an exception, one of them being that you're allowed to buy any kind of food with Ma'aseh Sheni money except for water or salt. So that led us into a discussion how we know that and what the criteria are, how what kind of food can be brought with Ma'aseh Sheni money. So the last thing we discussed was we had two braises, one of which said that we had like this. The pasuk in connection with Ma'aseh Sheni gives us a klal of prat, well, it gives us a couple of statements which we can understand as a ribui miut ribui, meaning that the Torah is first giving us an all-encompassing thing, a ribui, including everything, then a miut, where we're excluding one thing, then a ribui again, which means, therefore, that we end up including everything except for one thing, which is the least similar to the ones mentioned. So the pasuk says, you can buy with Ma'aseh Sheni money anything that you want. Then it mentions four specific things, bakar, tzoyin, yayin, and shecher, cattle, sheep, wine, or strong wine, and then it continues, v'chala shetishocha nafshecha, anything that you're soul desires. So again, one way of looking at it, we had Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehuda ben Gadish, his Talmud, learned it as a ribui miut ribui. So therefore, they said there's only one thing excluded, namely either just salt water by itself, that it has to at least have fish juice in it, or that even that's not enough, it has to have actual fish guts, some of the mamashos of the fish in it. We said the other chachamim, though, learned it as a klal of prat or klal, and therefore they say, so now, how do we define the prat? So we said there's two ways of looking at it. One is that we define it as pre-mitri v'gedulei karka. All four of these things are, one of them develops from an earlier one. Cattle and sheep are born to their parents. Wine and strong wine come from regular wine, grape juice or whatever, and intoxicating wine come from grapes, where grapes grow from previous grapes and so forth. And therefore, that would also, according to that way of looking at it, that would also include fish, which also have those criteria. Oh, sorry, that's pre-mitri. And also, you need v'gedulei, according to that way of looking at it, you also need the gedulei karka, that it's something which grows directly or indirectly from the ground. Hello? Which, good then, grapes grow directly from the ground. Animals eat plants which grow from the ground, and therefore you're good. Or you, in that case, fish would be included as well, because fish eat plants which grow. Ultimately, you have some fish eat plants. Larger fish may eat the smaller fish, but ultimately they all live off a food chain that begins with plants from the ground. Then on the other hand, the other way of looking at it is that it has to be pre-mi-pri or vlod-vlod-is-a-oretz, that it has to be bottom of Chav Zayin Amud Bey's last line, that it has to be vlod-vlod-is-a-oretz, something which actually is the child of something which is the child of something that ultimately was created from the earth. In that case, animals would be included, because Hashem created them from the earth during Sheshes Mebereshes. Grapes would be, and their products would be included because those grow from the ground. Any other meat or fruit or vegetables or whatever would be included by the same token. But fish would not, because fish during Ma'aseh Bereshis were created from the water. Okay. So the question is, the Gemara says, "Umi Amar Abaya Dogen Gedulei Kakaninu." Did Abaya really say that fish are considered something that grow from the ground? And therefore, if we say that the prat over here includes things that grow from the ground, then fish would be included, and you'd be allowed to buy fish with Ma'aseh Sheni money. But Amar Abaya, but Abaya himself says, Ochal putisa, if a person ate a putisa, which is some kind, Rashi just says, some kind of small sheretz hamayim, some kind of small water creature, which is also to eat, it's not in and of itself a kazayas in size, but it's small enough, it's below a kazayas in size. However, we have a concept called beria, that if a person eats a complete creature, which is osur, then he's chayav malchus anyway. So in this case, for the portisa, he's chayav four malchus. Now, why four malchus? Rashi explains, because You have two Isurim that it mentions. You have a number of times where the Torah says, mostly in Parashas Shemini, not to eat bugs. So you have ones that mention generally about Shrotim, Al Tashaktus, Nafshaseichem, and Veloisitamu Behem. So that includes all kinds of insects. Then you have two specific ones. Then you have a couple of other ones the Putisa lives in the water, so it's also under the ground, so it doesn't have fins and scales. And it's also again, it repeats a Loisa said that you're not allowed to eat from their flesh. So altogether, you have four Malkus. Now that's according to the Rashi, and that's according to most Rishonim. The Rambam has a whole different shita of that. The Rambam learns that you never get extra malchus because the Torah repeated an issur. Because the Rambam says, look, for example, I mean, the Torah repeats the issur of blood many times, but a person eats a kazayis of blood, they're only chai of one malchus. The Torah mentions the issur of Shabbos many times, but okay, Shabbos is not malchus, but still, the point is, the Rambam learns that just because an issur is repeated more times in the Torah doesn't make more malchus. So rather, the Rambam understands each of the what you have as a putisa is a creature that has a number. Now we have like this, the Rambam says, there's an issur against eating bugs that grow on the land, and another one about bugs that swim in the water, and another one about bugs that fly, and another one about bugs that reproduce sexually, and so forth. And then therefore, so the putisa meets four of these criteria. And the Rambam learns that the Putisa meets four different criteria over here, and therefore that's what the Gemara means when it says that you've got four malchus for eating it. Then Abaya continues, Nemola, if a person eats an ant, like a chomish, then he gets five malchus. Again, according to Rashi, the reason is because it, unlike the Putisa, which lives in the water, an ant is a sheretz ha'oretz, so you have an extra, so you take out the two that are referring to sheretz ha'mayim, but instead you add three more isurim that it mentions in the Torah, three times where it repeats not to eat creatures that crawl or creep on the ground. Tosfos over here actually gets into a bit of discussion about that, because one of them on the face of it is talking, based on other Gemaras, seems to be only talking about a snake or about Shemona Shrotzim, but whatever. The point is that you have five different Isurim someplace in the Torah regarding not eating bugs that live on the ground. Again, according to the Rambam, the vote is not the number of times that it says the Isur, but the number of different criteria that the ant fits. According to him, we're talking about a kind of ant that also flies and also lives on the land and also reproduces by eggs and so on and so forth. And therefore, you end up with five different criteria to ask it under. So everybody agrees you get five, because the Gemara is saying five. But Amram is a Rishon, you can't argue with the Gemara. But how we arrive at five, that you have the argument. Rashi learns, and most of the Rishonim agree with Rashi, that you arrive at it by counting the number of different times the Torah says not to eat bugs that live on the land. As opposed to, according to the Rambam, you have to look at how many different types of bugs the Torah, how many different classifications of bugs the Torah answers. So you have, there's one classification of ones that fly, and another one of ones that run around on the ground, and another one of ones that are produced from males and females through eggs, and another one for ones that live in the water and so forth. And therefore, depending how many of those classifications a particular bug fits under, then you're going to have that many number of malchus. And Sira Loika Shesh, by the same token, if a person eats a bee or a hornet, which flies, then you have six malchus, because then you have the five that apply to an ant, plus one more that applies to Sheretz Ha'oif. Now Rashi refers to, you do have another pasuk that refers in Parashas Kedoshim that seems to refer to bugs over cholash tumos, but Rashi explains that one's not referring to bugs, that one's referring to larger creatures that are not kosher, that don't chew their cud or have split hooves or whatever the criteria are for a particular classification of animal. Tumos literally means to creep around, but Rashi explains a sheretz is, the definition of a sheretz is a creature that walks very, very low to the ground. So like you don't even see it walking, it just looks like it's slithering along. So it can be a creature that has legs, for example, like a centipede or a mouse or whatever, that can still be called a sheretz because its legs are very, very short. You don't really see its legs moving. As opposed to tumos, Rashi says, would refer to larger creatures that actually have visible legs and that walk around. Okay, so there's where Tosfos argues that tumorous refers to a snake. So one thing is, there's a Tosfos elsewhere in Shas that mentions, we know that before the Chet Etadas, the snake had legs. So therefore, maybe the Torah is referring to it based on that. The snake at one time had legs, and therefore it could be called termites. So even now that it doesn't, after the Chet Etzadas, nevertheless, it can still be called that, even though, yeah. Okay. Anyway, the point is that Abaya is saying that a potisa which lives in the water, you get four malchus for eating it. Now, all the four malchus that we mentioned, have none of them mention hasheretz, hasheretz, ala oretz, that it lives on the land, because the potisa lives in the water. But the im isa, if you're going to tell me that fish are considered gedule kauka, because fish eat fish, which ultimately eat plants, loki mishum sheretz hasheretz, mishum hasheretz hasheretz ala oretz, then shouldn't a person also get malchus for eating the potisa because he ate sheretz oretz? So he should be chayav more malchus than just the four. Because in addition to the four that we mentioned, you also have an issu in the Torah, don't eat sheretz aretz. In fact, Rashi says, based on that, he would be chayv seven malchus, because you have five times where the Torah repeats not to eat sheretz aretz, and two where it says not to eat sheretz amayim, and that makes seven. Again, according to the Rambam, actually, or Gemara, the Ramban in his notes on Sefer HaMitzvah, so the Rambam points out that or Gemara would be a little bit shver according to the Rambam, because if you say that it depends how many different criteria it meets, then why should there be based on or Gemara over here? The question is a potisa called a sheretz aretz or not? So it sounds like it's just based on the number of times it repeats it in a Torah, not the number of different classifications it falls under. Anyway, so the point is that based on that, it seems that Abaya agrees that fish are not considered gedulei karka. So then we're back to the question. We had two brises. One of them said that the criteria to buy something with Maisa Sheni, the prat for the klal, the prat of klal we're using includes fish. The other one says we didn't say includes or excludes fish. We said one of them says that you learn it as gedulei karka. The other one says as vlod vlodis aretz. Gedulei karka again would mean that they live off something, they live off a food chain. They live off a food chain which includes plants of the earth. So therefore, animals are included because they eat plants. We said Abaya was arguing fish should be included on those grounds as well, but now we just slug that up. On the other hand, if we say vlod vlodis aretz, it has to be something that descends from something that was created from the ground during sheishes meibereishes, meaning not fish. But the problem is, fish, we just said, are not gedulei karka either. Otherwise, the person would get extra malchus for eating the potisa, for eating because it would be considered a sheretz aretz. So no, Ela Amar Ravina. So Ravina says no. The difference between those two brises, oifus ikabinayu. The argument between those two brises would be, would you be allowed to buy bird meat with Maisa Sheni money, chicken, for example? So what's the difference? Lamanda on the primi priva gedule karka. If you say that all you need is primi priva gedule karka, good, hani nami gedule karka ninu. Chicken and other birds are also primi pri, because a bird comes from an egg that comes from a previous bird, and it is gedule karka, because again, ultimately, the birds eat things that grow from the ground. Chickens, for example, eat grain or whatever that grows from the ground. Well, they eat worms too, fine, but the worms themselves eat plants, so that's also fine. On the other hand, lamanda omah vlod vlodis aretz. But if we say that you need vlod vlodis aretz, that it descends from something that was created from the earth during sheishes and meibereishes, then no, hani oifus minera kak nivru. Then birds were not created directly from the ground. Birds were created from mud, from a mixture of dirt and water. The Gemara tells us in Cholin, people were made from Vayitzra Hashem Elokim Ofer Min Adama. Hashem made Adam and Chava attached to him, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, from dirt. The animals also, it says, Vayasa Elokim Eschayas Ha'Oretz L'mina, Vatoitze Oretz Nefesh Chaya. The earth should produce living creatures. So the animals and humans were created from the dirt. Birds, on the other hand, the Gemara points out in Cholin, you have one pasuk that mentions that Hashem created the birds from the water, a different one that says that Hashem created them from the dirt. So how do you reconcile it? The answer is Hashem created them from mud, from like where you have water and dirt mixed together, where you have mud, like water floating over the dirt, and Hashem created them from a mixture of that. So it's not purely from dirt like the animals. And as we mentioned yesterday, the Gemara mentions in Cholin over there that's a deeper reason why animals need to be shechted in both simonim and a bird only in one, because a bird is on a bit of a higher level, as we talked about yesterday. Anyway, so that would be the nafkamina. Okay, So now that we established that, so again, we can say the two brises are arguing on the question, are you allowed to buy chicken or other bird meat with Maaser Sheni money? So now we have to ask, Mandem Rabbi Ofis Maitaime or Mandem Mamet Ofis Maitaime? Taka, what's the underlying reason? Why would one of them be including birds and the other one excluding them? After all, we have a klal of prato klal. Shouldn't we say the second klal is the main thing, and that means we should include more things? We should try to make the klal as broad as possible, as long as it somehow matches the prat. So in that case, birds should be included according to both of them. Why is one of them trying to narrow the scope of the klal and make it that it has to be that it has to be vlad vladis aretz? So the answer is mandem rabbi ofis, because you have like this. How does a klal of prat or klal work? Basically, you know, we say every day in davening, right? You have klal of prat, you have prat or klal, and then you have klal of prat or klal. So now you think of it like this. A klal of prat works like this. You have, the Torah tells us a general statement, then it qualifies it and says some specific thing. We say, ein b'chlal elamash b'prat. The klal is limited only exclusively to what it says in the prat. We don't include anything else. We have these gemaras in other places, like the Genozer, for example, where it talks about, so in that case, why do you need the klal in the first place? The reason is because otherwise we would have made a binyan av from it. So the klal and prat together tell us, don't make a binyan av. Anyway, a prat or klal works the other way around. You have the Torah tells us a specific prat. Then it says a klal. Then we say nasa klal moisef ala prat. It means the prat is one specific example. And then the klal includes anything else which is in any way similar to that. Or maybe even not in any way similar. It could just be anything. Klal of prat or klal is kind of a combination of those two things. So the question is, which klal is the more important one? So, mandem rabbi ofis, the one who includes birds, the braisa that says that to buy Maaser Sheni, it has to be the gedule karka. He says, kasavar klal of basra dafka. He says, the second klal is meant specifically. It's meant to only include certain things. Meaning, in other words, prat klal nasa. No, he says, in other words, that the second klal is the more important one, kind of. Therefore, essentially, what you're dealing with is prat klal nasa klal musaf ala prat. Essentially, in other words, forgetting about the first klal for a second, basically what we're doing is we're starting with a prat klal, where it means the klal includes everything. So far we should include everything. The israb will who call mili, so therefore we include everything. Vahani klal kama. So what does the first klal accomplish? The first klal is not meant to be as strong as the second klal. It's meant lamurti kol delay dami lenishneitz dodin. All you have to have is, because of the first klal, you have to have that anything that's going to be included in the group has to be similar to the prat in two ways, but not more than that. So once you have, now when you think of it, the four things that I mentioned in the pasuk, bokar, tsayin, yayin, and shecher, have three things in common. They're all primi-pri, they're all a fruit or an object that's created from a previous one. They're all gedulei karka, because they all grow directly or indirectly from things that grow in the ground. And they're also vlad vladis aretz, because they descend from something that was created from the ground in sheishes mebereishes. So if we say that the second klal is the more important one, and the first one is just there in order to make it not a prat klal, but to make it something different, then what we say is, as long as the first klal is weaker than the second klal, as long as you have something which is similar to the prat in two ways, then that's good enough to include. So you have primi primi gedulei karka. We don't care about the fact that birds were created from mud rather than from dirt. That's already a third thing, and we don't need three similarities. All we need is two similarities. And in two ways, they're similar because they're primi-pri and they're gedulei karka. They grow from the earth and they come from a parent. They come from parents, yeah. Omandim amayet ofis. Whereas if we exclude birds, then we say kasava klola kama davka. Then we say the other way around. The first klal is the stronger one. Therefore, essentially, what we have is klal of prat and b'chlal elamash b'prat. So klal of prat, the rule is we limit the klal only to the prat exclusively. So far, if we stop there, we would say the only things you could buy with Maaser Sheni would be the four things listed in the pasuk: bakar, tzayin, yayin, and shecher. So hani a midyach rinaloi, only these four, nothing else. Vahani kol abasra. So now the fact is we do have a second klal, but that opinion holds. What does the second klal accomplish? L'rabuye kol de domi le mishloishet zadin. There you need, in order for it to be a klal of Prata Klal, in order for something to be included in order for something to be included in the Klal that's based on that Prat, it has to be similar to it in every possible way. Well, no, we only have three things over here. You only have Kri Mikri, Gedulei Karka, and Vlad Velotis Arets. But you have to have it similar to it in all of those ways. So here we're saying three, but actually, if there were four, then it would require four. If it were five, then it would require five, and so forth. You have to have that whatever you're going to include, according to this way of looking at it. In other words, again, according to the first way, you're starting out with a very open-ended thing. You're starting out with a pratu klal, which should mean that you include everything, but you have an original klal, and therefore you have to qualify it a little bit. The other way of looking at it, we're saying it's the other way around. We start with a klal of prat. So we have a very, very limited thing that's supposed to be only the prat. Then we have the second klal tells us, okay, include some other things in it as well. But they have to be as similar as possible. In every possible way, they have to be similar to the prat. And birds are not similar in every possible way because they're not vlad vladis arets, because again, the original birds were not created from the dirt, they were created from mud, unlike animals and unlike plants. So therefore, according to that, they wouldn't be included.
Okay.
And the other one holds the last cloud is more important, exactly. In general, all of the 13 midas shatur and adreshes for him, each one of them has sub-rules to it. You know, we say every day in davening, we rattle them off, we kavachayim, mekzeira shava, etc. As we go through shas, we find each one of them has sub-rules to it. And you have, there are Svarim, for example, Halichas Olam is a classic sefer from one of the late Rishonim that deals with the details of how the mechanisms of how these work. Earlier you have Sefer Akrisis from Rabbeinu Shimshon, one of the Baalei HaTosfos. Each one of the rules has sub-rules and details how exactly it operates. So here we have an example how exactly does Klal Prata Klal operate, and we see that there are two different opinions exactly how it works. So we do paskin like one. So the Rambam over here paskins that you are allowed to buy birds with Ma'aseh Sheni money. So therefore that means we go according to the opinion that you start with a prato klal and then you add the earlier klal to it. So in other words, you start out as broadly as possible, and all you have to have is the klal has to be similar to the prat in two ways, no more than that. You don't need it to be similar in all possible ways. Yeah. Okay. Now getting back to Eruv. Again, we said in the Mishnah that you can make an Eruv with anything. Now, we said yesterday in the Gemara that even though we said you can make with anything, we said you can't learn from a klal even when it says chutz. There may be other exceptions that are not listed. So now we're going to deal with that point. So the Gemara says, Amar of Yehuda Meshmeder of Shmuel Mashilas Meshmeder Rav, Ma'arvin b'pipuin over chalugligas over good gedonius. You're allowed to make an Eruv, Tumen, and according to Rashi also Eruv Chatzeres, with any of these three kinds of vegetables or herbs. Pipuin, chalugligas, and good gedonius. So all of them Rashi gives French translations for. The first one, pipuin, it's not really quite so clear what Rashi means by his translation. He uses a French word, which the dictionaries that give on Laze Rashi give a couple of possibilities what exactly Rashi means by it. So we're not certain about that. Chaluglagos is a plant in English. It's called purslane. They use it in some Mediterranean cooking. In Greek salads, for example, sometimes you have it. And good gedonius, Rashi defines as cilantro. You know, you have sometimes you buy in the store in the fruit and vegetable section of the store. They have bundles of greens that are called cilantro. They have a sharpish taste to them. They use them. The seeds of them are coriander. We have the pasuk, for example, mentions that the mun was shaped like coriander seeds. It was round. And then you have the greens of them are also edible. They use them as a flavoring or whatever in salads, and it's called cilantro. Okay. But you're not allowed to make an Eruv with choses or kafnias. Choses is unripe grain. They harvest the grain. We learned about this at Shabbos. They harvest the grain before it's ripe. Nowadays, they call that wheatgrass. You have sometimes in health food stores or whatever, you can go there and they'll serve wheatgrass juice. That's basically what choses is they take the grain before it's fully grown and they harvest it and in that particular case, they juice it and they make juice out of it, but you could also eat it. You could also eat it by itself. So you're not allowed to, make an eruv with that or with kafnias, which are unripe dates. Okay. So let's figure that out. Gudgudonius Mima Ivan, you're telling me that you're allowed to make an Eruv with Gudgudonius, cilantro. Now, by the way, it's worth pointing out, apparently there are two different things in Shas called Gudgudonius, because in Brachas also it mentions Gudgudonius, and Rashi over there translates it as cherries. But here, Bapashtus is not talking about cherries, because there's no particular, first of all, there's no particular reason to think you can't make an Eruv with cherries. They're perfectly edible. And besides which, the Gemara is going to make a distinction in a second whether they became hard and developed seeds in them or not. And we know the cherries that we eat already have seeds in them to begin with. So Bapashtus, there are two different things in Shas called Gudgudonius. You have cherries over there in Brachas, and you have cilantro over here in the Gemara. Okay. So, are you able to make an Eruv with Gudgudonius, with cilantro? V'hatanya, we learn in a brisa, Gudgudonius merube bonim yoichlu, only people who have a lot of children should eat Gudgudonius, chasuche bonim lo yoichlu, people who don't have children, who don't have very many children, should not eat them, because it's memayat es hazera, it reduces the amount, it reduces a man's fertility. And the brisa continues, v'im hukshu lezera, if they became hard and they developed seeds in them, so like this, you buy them in the store, soft, for example, they're just greens. Eventually, if you leave the plant in the ground, eventually, like many plants, it hardens and it develops seeds inside. So if you wait until that point to eat it, then it's not healthy for you at all. Even people with a lot of children shouldn't eat it. So we see that Gudgudonius are not so good for you if you don't have children yet. So how can you make an Eruv with them? The answer is Tirgma Ashaloi Huk Shalazera or Merube Bonim. You can answer that when Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rab that you're able to use it for an Eruv, we're talking about somebody who, when they're not hard yet, they're still soft, and people who have many children. So therefore, we said that they're perfectly able to eat it. There's no problem for them of it being Mematinus Azera, because they already have a lot of children anyway. So therefore, Gzundei, it's a perfectly good food for them, and therefore they can make an Eruv with it. Or the Iboyesema, another possibility, La'olam la'chasuche bonim, after all, we could say even people who don't have very many children might be able to make an Eruv with Gudgudonius. Da'chazu la'merube bonim, because after all, Gudgudonius can be eaten by people who have a lot of children. So in other words, just because it's not suitable for one person doesn't mean it's not a suitable food at all. Well, I guess that you're asking how is it that the number of children determines whether you're allowed to eat something that stops the zera? I guess the vote is, first of all, it doesn't stop it just reduces it. Mematin es hazera, Rashi says. So the point is, in other words, so if a person has a lot of children already, he doesn't have to worry so much. I mean, he still has a mitzvah of that he should still try to have children later in life also, because you never know which ones are going to end up being the good ones. But nevertheless, he already was Mekayim, so therefore there's less of an issue if he eats something. Well, again, he can't eat something that'll actually make him completely infertile, but here, where it only reduces his fertility, then maybe there's not such a problem with it. Anyway, so the second answer in the Gemara is saying that even a person who is chosuch bonim, who doesn't have children yet, even it's fine. He shouldn't be eating Gudgudonius, but the fact that other people who have a lot of children are able to eat them would make it that it is valid for an Eruv. Miloitnan, after all, didn't we learn in our Mishnah? Ma'arvin l'nozer b'yayin l'yisrael b'trumah. That we said you can make an Eruv for a Nazir using wine, even though he himself can't drink it. A Yisrael is able to use Truma, even though he himself can't eat it. Alma, so we see from that, Afagab Dalei Chazi Lahai, Chazi Lahai. So it doesn't matter. Even though the food is not suitable for one person, at least it's suitable for a different person. Hachanami, Afagab Dalei Chazi Lahai, Chazi Lahai. So the same thing over here with these Gudgudonius. Even a person himself who is Chosuch Bonim, who doesn't have children yet, fine, he himself shouldn't be eating Gudgudonius because they're bad for him. But the fact that somebody else could eat them might be a valid enough reason to make an Eruv with it. No, that's the thing. The halacha is not that it has to be something that you can eat. It can be something that you yourself can't eat, as long as somebody else can eat it. That's what we mentioned in the Mishnah. We had Sumchus arguing that a Yisroel can only use cholin. We said that even he agrees that a Nazir could use wine. We'll see in a few days in the Gemara, we'll get to why Sumchus agrees on the one and disagrees on the other. But the point is, the, according to the Chachamim, anyway, you don't even have that problem. According to the Chachamim, you're allowed, a Yisroel is allowed to use Truma, even though he's never going to be able to eat Truma. So the same thing over here. Okay. I mean, there is a difference. The Ritva does mention that maybe according to the first answer, we would draw a distinction between something which you yourself are, you're physically capable of eating, and it's not going to be harmful to you, but Halacha tells you you can't eat it. For example, truma for Yisrael, or wine for another, as opposed to over here where it's physically harmful for you. Whereas the second answer says it doesn't matter as long as it's suitable for somebody else. Okay. The Iboy Sema, or yet another possibility, Kika Amar Rav, the Hindu Kuki Madoi. Maybe when Rav says that you're able to use good Gudonius for an Eruv, maybe he's talking about specifically the ones that come from Madai. Madai is nowadays media, it's nowadays part of Iran. It's part of Iran nowadays, but the good Gedonius that come from there are good for you. Those are not like the kind like that we're talking about that are bad for you if you don't have children, and then if they become hard, then they're bad for anybody. The ones that come from Madai are good ones, are good for you. So those are the kinds Rav maybe is talking about that you're able to use for an Eruv. Not necessarily the other kinds. You got to know your plants, yeah. Okay. Fine. Okay. So now again, we had Rav gave us a list of 5 plants. 3 of them he said you can use. 2 of them, Chozes and Kafnias, he said you can't use. So we said again, Chozes we said is wheatgrass, and Kafnias are unripe dates. So let's analyze that. Over Chozes loy, you're telling me that you're not able to make an Eruv with Chozes. Vaha Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, the Seimer of Yehuda says, not the Seimer, yeah, the Seimer of Yehuda says, in the name of Rav, Kshus for Chozes Ma'arvin Behen. You are able to make an Eruv with Kshus or Chozes. Kshus is a parasitic plant. In times of the Gemara, they used it when they were making beer. Like nowadays, they put a plant called hops into beer, and it gives it a certain kick. It gives it a certain sharpness. So in those days, they use this Kshus for the same purpose. It's a parasitic plant. You have, for example, you'll have a bush or a tree or whatever. And Kshus will grow on it, and as we're going to learn on Amud Beis, it gets its nutrients through that plant. It doesn't have roots of its own in the ground. It just gets its nourishment through the plant that it grows on. So Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Rab that you're able to use Kshus and Chozes for an Eruv, or Mevorchen Aleihem by a Pri Hadama, and also that you say Hadama on them. We learned this in Brachas. So what do you mean? So apparently you can make an Eruv on Chozes. So what is Rav telling us that you can't? The answer is Loi Kasha, Ha Mikamid Osa Rav LeBavel, Ha LeBosod Osa Rav LeBavel. It depends. Before and after Rav came to Bavel. So before Rav came to Bavel, as far as he knew, nobody ever eats Chozes. So therefore, you can't make an Eruv with it. On the other hand, when he came to Bavel and he found that people in Bavel are eating Chozes, then he said you're able to make it for an Eruv. The problem with that is Bavel have your Rubadalma. So how does that help? Is Bavel most of the world? In other words, very nice. They eat Chozes in Bavel. But that's not the majority of the world. So how can we say that everywhere else in the world they can use Chozes for an Eruv? And in fact, the Ritva explains that the Gemara is asking not only on other places where they don't eat Chozes b'chol, even in Bavel itself, it should be considered an unnatural thing to eat Chozes. It should be considered Batla Daita Eitz HaKoladim. It's not a normal thing. Fine. And here and there, you have people in Bavel who eat Chozes. It's not like everybody does it. It's not, and so it should be Botladaitan. So even in Bavel, you shouldn't be able to use it. Tosfos discusses over here a little bit about the pros and cons of that whole kind of thing. Sometimes we say that you do go according to a certain place. Sometimes we learned in Shabbos as an example. We learned in Shabbos as an example, for example, where you have a question over there. Are you allowed to have thorns growing in your vineyard, or would it be Kalaya Kerem? So we have, I think Rabbi Eliezer had said over there in the Gemara, that in Arabia, they grow thorns because they need them for their camels to eat, right? So and the Gemara says Arabia is not Rubadalma, but Tosfos says the difference is, over there, we can still say, we're not going to say Botla Daita Eitzakoladam, because after all, the reason why they do it is because they have a lot of camels. Anywhere else in the world, if they had a lot of camels, they would also do the same thing. On the other hand, everywhere in the world, they grow wheat. And yet, only in Bavel do they harvest it as Chozes and eat it. So therefore, we can well say that we shouldn't go according to Bavel, even especially certainly in other places, and according to the Ritva, maybe not even in Bavel itself. And in fact, the Gemara continues. V'Altanya, we learn in a Braisa, Hapul v'Hasa'ora v'Hatilton shazara l'Yerek, peas. or peas, or barley, or tilton. Tilton in English is called tilton. In English it's called fenugreek. They have they use it in Mediterranean cooking. They use it in Israeli cooking, for in Arab cooking, or whatever. And it's called chilba. It has a sharpish taste to it. They use it in some of them. They use it in Yemenite cooking, etc. Anyway, chilba is, I think, an Arab word. It's an Arabic word, I think. Anyway, so those kind of, now all those kinds of things, pul, which is peas, and sa'oda, which is barley, and this tilton, all of them have leaves, and the leaves are edible. But you don't usually plant them for the leaves. You plant them in order to eat the seeds. Eventually, they develop seeds, and you eat the seeds. So therefore, so if shazaron l'yerek, if you planted them in order to eat the greens, then doesn't matter. Botla dieta etzokolodim. We say botla dieta etzokolodim. We don't factor in what he does. That's considered an unusual way of eating it. Therefore, when it comes to meiser, when it comes to truma and meiser, you only have to take from the seeds. You do not have to take from the greens, because the greens are not something that's normally eaten. On the other hand, you have shachalayim and gargir, which are, shachalayim in English is called crests, gargir in English is called arugula. So crest, I don't think you find much nowadays. Maybe in specialty stores, arugula you sometimes find at the greengrocers or in the fruit and vegetable aisle of the supermarket or whatever. Those kinds of things. Sometimes people eat the greens of them, like arugula. You can find arugula greens in the store. Sometimes people eat the seeds. So therefore, shazoron l'yerek, if you planted them having in mind to eat the greens, misasrin yerek v'zera, then you take meiser from both the greens and from the seeds, because each one of them has a chashivus of its own. It could be you plant them differently, or it could just be you had in mind when you planted them which one you're. Eventually, you do have. It is possible to cultivate plants specifically for one part of them, and eventually, over time, you can change them. For example, you think of, you have, let's say, for example, nowadays, you have cabbage and cauliflower and a couple of other vegetables are the same genetically, but cabbage is grown specifically for the leaves, so the farmers, Davka, choose the ones that have larger leaves and plant those, and over time, you have genetic drift. And you have ones that produce only leaves and very little of the florets, as opposed to, let's say, broccoli or cauliflower. I forget cauliflower. I think it is whatever. They cultivate the ones that have more of the flowers and less of the leaves. So you could have that, I guess, if you're planting shachalayim or gargir, you could be planting one variety or the other. Or it could just be that this particular one that you planted, you have in mind to eat the greens versus the seeds. Anyway, so if you planted them for the greens, misasrin yerek v'zera, then you have to take meiser from the greens and from the seeds, zoron lozera, and if you plant them for the seeds, the same thing, misasrin zera v'yerek, then you also need to take meiser from the seeds and from the greens. So why does Tosafot say? So why does it have to say? Why does it have to say it in two different ways? Just say you always take meiser when it comes to shachalayim and gargir from the greens and from the seeds. So Tosafot mentions because there's a couple of differences. One of them is the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah talks about at great length. There's a difference with different kinds of plants. When what year do they belong to as far as truma and meiser? As far as meiser, we know some years you have meiser sheni and some years you have meiser ani. So how do you determine which year it belongs to? So when it comes to plants that are grown for their seeds, then you go based on when they reach one third of their growth. When you come to vegetables that are planted for their greens, then you go according to when they're picked. So now it becomes important. So it's true. In either way, you're still taking truma and meiser from the seeds and from the greens, but it becomes important to know which one is the primary thing, and therefore which year does it belong to. If it grew, if it finished one-third of its growth before Rosh Hashanah, but you only picked it after it's completely mature, after Rosh Hashanah, then depending whether you grew it for the seeds or whether you grew it for the greens, you're going to have different kinds of meiser that you take from it, meiser sheni versus meiser ani. Anyway, the point is that in the first part of the Braisa, we mentioned plants that normally you don't eat the greens of at all, and therefore even if a person plans to eat the greens of them, we say botla daita, so it should be the same thing with choses. So just because some people in Bavel eat choses is not a reason that you should be able to make an error with it. The answer is ki ka'amar Rav, Bidignuniyosa. The answer is that Rav, when he says that you're able to make an Eruv with choses and that you make Boi Pri Adam on it, he's talking about the kind of choses that is cultivated in gardens. So not that kind is important enough. That kind many people eat, not just in Bavel. So therefore, we're not going to say Bavel Daita on that. But the kind where we said before that you can't make an Eruv with choses is talking about the wild kind. So there, most people don't eat it. So maybe in Bavel, a few people eat it, but Bavel Daita. Okay. The question is, we mentioned in the Braisa before about Shachalayim and Gargir, where we said that you can grow them for the greens or for the seeds. So Shachalayim, we understand, they can use the seeds of them. But Zeda Gargir L'maychazi, what do you use seeds of Gargir, of arugula, for? You have in the stores all the time. They sell the greens. They never sell the seeds of them. What would you use Gargir seeds for? Amar Rabbi Yechon, Anshakein Mishonim, Shaloya Lahen Pilpulin. In earlier generations where they did not have pepper is native to certain parts of India. So I guess in the olden days, before Rabbi Yechon's times, they didn't yet have it in Eretz Yisrael. So they didn't have pepper available to them. Sheikh Genoise, what they would do is they would grind up gargir seed, and they would use it to dip their roast meat into. So we see, in other words, it was something that they would actually have a use for. Tosfos points out, it's not just that they would dip into it. That's not reason enough for it to be chayiv and meiser. What it really is the gargir seed is edible on its own. They don't usually do that. They don't usually grind it up just to eat it as is. When they're going to do that, they use it mostly for dipping food in. But in principle, it could be eaten by itself. Therefore, it's chayiv and meiser. So the Gemara tells further about this thing about choses. The Gemara tells Reb Zera ki avi cholosh megirse, when Reb Zera got tired from his learning and he needed to take a break, have a ozel v'yosiv apischa de Rabbi Yehuda bar Ami. He would go and sit by the door of Rabbi Yehuda bar Ami. Omar, and he says to himself, ki nafki v'ayli rabbanon, when the chachamim come in and out, this Rabbi Yehuda bar Ami, I guess, had a yeshiva in his house, so when the chachamim come in and out, ekum mikamayu, I will stand up in their honor, like you stand up for a talmud chacham, b'nei seva talkum, v'akav b'hu agra, and I'll receive a reward min hashamayim for that. So you see that what he uses on his downtime. You know, the rest of us, we're tired of learning, what are we going to do? You know, we're going to play a game or something. Reb Zera has higher things in mind. Mitzvahs. By the way, you see from that, how tiring learning Torah is compared to even getting up and sitting down for every Talmud Chacham that comes out is less tiring than learning Torah. So therefore, for him, that was a break. There is an interesting point, by the way, the B'nai Yisoschar asks, what do you mean he wants to get a reward for it? It was yesterday's Perek Echad of Rambam that you're not supposed to serve Hashem in order to get reward. So he says, because by standing up for a Talmud Chacham, the expression of the pasuk is, "Mipnei seva tokom v'hodah to pnei zokim, v'yareisa me'alekecha ani Hashem." So he explains what it means is, on a deeper level, what it means is, the reward, min hashamayim, for standing up in honor of Talmud Chacham, is that you'll get greater yiras shamayim. That's the reward that Abzeda wanted. The reward that he'll find it easier to reach Yiras Shemayim, that's the reward he was looking for. That kind of reward you can be doing mitzvahs in order to get. Okay, anyway. So, the B'nai Yisoschar says that, yeah. So, Nafak Osa Yidnuka Debeirav. So, a boy who was learning in Cheder came out. Amalei, so Rav Zera asks him, "My Agmarach Rabach, what did your Rebbe teach you in Yeshivat in school today?" Amalei says, "We learned Kshus Bara Pri Adama Chazes Shakol Niyabedvaray. That on Kshus, again, this parasitic plant they use in making beer. If you eat it by itself, you say Hadama, and on Chazes, this unripe grain, this wheat grass, you would say Shakol. Now, before we said that Rav had said you say Hadama on both of them, but this child's Rebbe had taught him." Now you say Hadama on one and Shahakal on the other. Amalei, so Rav Zera says, Adarabe Ipcha Mistamra. On the contrary, wouldn't the logic tell us the other way around? Hai me ara kamarabi vahai me avira kamarabi. Because after all, Chazes grows from the ground. It is something that grows from the ground. It's unripe, but it still grows from the ground. So it should be Hadama. Kshus doesn't grow from the ground. It grows from the moisture in the air. Therefore, it should be only Shahakal. However, the Gemara says, "V'hilchzak yinuka debeirav." The halacha is like what this child reported in the name of his Rebbe, and not like Rav Zera, and also not like Rav. My timer, why is that? Hai gmar peri v'hai lav gmar peri. Because there is a different difference, we can say. Kshus, okay, it doesn't grow directly from the ground, but it is at least a complete peri. It grew to maturity. So therefore, you would say hadama on it, as opposed to chazis, wheatgrass, is not gmar peri. It's not the complete. It's not the complete ripe thing yet. It's still unripe, and therefore it gets downgraded a bracha. So instead of a hadama, it gets downgraded to shakol because it's not ripe yet. You're saying, but shouldn't shus get it only a shakol because it only grows from the moisture in the air and not from the ground? The answer is lohi. Actually, that's not so. Shus nami me'arak karavi. As a matter of fact, shus does get its nourishment from the ground as well, and we see that. We see that if we chop down the thorn bush or whatever, the bush on which the krus is growing, or maisa krusa, then the krus also dies. So we see it's not like a mushroom or whatever, which just gets its nourishment from the moisture in the air. It actually does get its nourishment through the plant that it's growing on. So indirectly, it's like we said before about gedulei karka, that animals don't directly grow from the ground, but they eat plants that grow from the ground. Here it's the same kind of thing. Krus grows on something which grows from the ground, and it gets its nourishment that way. So therefore, in fact, it would be hadama. Okay. So that takes care of chazis. So okay, the bottom line is we're saying that there are different kinds of chazis. There's the kind of what I said before, that the halacha is like, we said, the Gemara said the halacha is like the cheder boy, and I said not like Reb Zera, and also I said not like Rab. Actually, Tosfos says that last part is wrong. The halacha is still like Rab, that chazis you do make hadama, because we said in the Gemara before there's a type of chazis that's cultivated in gardens. That kind, the chazis itself is considered gmar pera, and therefore you would say hadama on it. The kind of chazis that we're talking about, where you would only say shakol, as this boy's Rebbe taught him, is the kind which is mainly you grow it in a field where mainly the usual thing would be to let it grow to maturity and then harvest it. So if you harvest it only as chazis, then we say batla daita, and therefore it's on there, and it's not gmar peri, and therefore it's only shakol. Because if you let it grow to the end, then it is gmar peri. But at that point you don't have chazis anymore. At that point you have actual grain and straw, and the straw is only edible by animals. We're talking about if you harvest it at a much earlier stage, then it's chazis. It is edible by people because it's still soft. But if it's not grown in a garden specifically for that purpose, then it's not gmar peri. And that's when as the boys Rebbe was saying, you would say shakol, and that's the halacha. Okay. Now, the next thing we had, again, on Omer Aleph, we have Rav telling us two things you can't make an Eruv with, chazes and kafnias. So chazes now we've dealt with, but there's different kinds of chazes. One kind that you can make an Eruv with, and you say hadam on, and a different kind that you can't make an Eruv with, and which you would say only shakol. Now let's talk about the kafnias, which are unripe dates. So Rav had said you can't make an Eruv with them. So the question is, of a kafnias ein ma'arvin? So what are you telling me? You can't make an Eruv with kafnias. V'hatanya, we learn in a b'raisa, kur nikach v'kesef ma'iser, kur, which is heart of palm, you are allowed to buy it with ma'iser money. In other words, it's considered a food. It's not considered just like wood from the tree. Now, we're going to learn later on, it's not edible as it is. When you take it from the tree, you can't eat it by itself, but you can cook it, like you have nowadays. You buy jarred hearts of palm, they're actually cooked to soften them, and then they're edible. But you are allowed to buy it with kesef ma'aser. It doesn't matter the fact that it's not cooked yet, because you could cook it. Ve'ein metame tumas ochlin. However, it's not metame, it doesn't become tome as food does, because right now it's not food. The kafnias nikochas v'kesef ma'aser. On the other hand, kafnias, these unripe dates, you could also buy with ma'aser money. Because again, the point is, both the kur and the kafnias, they both meet the criteria that we learned before. They are pre-mipri, because they grow from a tree which grew from a previous tree, etc. They are all gedulei karka, because they all grow from the ground. They are even also, vlod as a karka, because they ultimately descend from trees that Hashem created from the ground on the third day of Ma'aser Bereishis. So you can buy them with Ma'aser Sheni money. The fact that right now they're not edible doesn't matter, because you could make them edible, as we're going to discuss later on. No. Bakar and son don't grow from eggs either. Bakar and son, you have a live animal. That's the point. In other words, a plant also has a mother and a father. You have, there are male and female plants, as we're going to discuss soon. So yeah, so you are allowed to buy kur with kesef meiser, but it's not matamat u'masechlin. On the other hand, the kafnius nikachas b'kesef meiser, kafnius you can also buy with meiser sheni money, but unlike the kur u'matamat u'masechlin, they do become tame as food because even right now you could eat them. And the Braisa continues, Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a kur harei uka'etz l'chol dvarav. Rabbi Yehuda says that hor palm is considered like wood for all purposes, elosh nikach v'kesef meiser, with the exception that you can buy it with kesef meiser. Now that sounds like he's saying the same thing as the Tanakama. The Tanakama also said you can buy it with kesef meiser, but other than that, it doesn't have the dinim of food as far as tumas erchon. So what's the difference? The Gemara will discuss later on in the Amud what Rabbi Yehuda is arguing with the Tanakama. And on the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda continues, but kafnias haren kapri l'chol divrehem. Kafnias, on the other hand, are like fruit for all purposes, elosh p'turas min ha-meiser, with the exception that they're potter from giving meiser from them. So the point is, therefore, so b'pashtus then, so if they're like fruit for every, the reason why they're potter from meiser is because not nigmar malachton. It's not, they're not ripe fruit yet. The Tanakhama considers it fruit for all purposes, because he said metame tomas eichon, because he considers them food. Rabbi Yehuda says, but they're unripe, therefore they can't be, therefore they're not chayv and meiser, because fruit is only chayv and meiser when it's ripe. Okay, the point is that we see that kafnius, we see that both of them agree that basically kafnius are considered fruit, so why shouldn't you be able to use it for an eruv? The answer is, hasam b'dinisachni. The answer is, when Rav is talking about, The answer is rather the other way around. The Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda are talking about unripe dates that come from male trees. Now, date palms and a lot. There are certain kinds of trees with trees and plants. You have some of them that are both male and female, where they're self-fertilizing, and then you have other kinds of trees and plants where you have separate male and female ones, and you actually need pollen from one to pollinate the other one in order to produce fruit. Date palms are like that. You have male date palms and you have female date palms, and you need the pollen from the male ones to get to the female ones in order to produce actual dates. Now, what happens is, the male trees do produce dates. Those never ripen on their own, because those come from the male tree. It's only the female tree that produces ripe ones. So therefore, so with the male tree, that's it. That is the Gemar Perah. So Rashi describes, you harvest them in Nisan, as opposed to actual dates, which you would only harvest later in the year. And that's it. They're edible at that point. So therefore, those are the kind that the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda are arguing on the exact status of them. So the Chachamim are saying that it's considered food for all purposes, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying the fact is they're not ripe and therefore they're potter from Meiser. There's a different girsa that some of the Rishonim have, not b'nisachni, but b'nisoni, the ones that are harvested in Nisan. It amounts to the same thing, though. Anyway, when Rav says that you can't use kafnius for meiser, he's talking about the ones that come from the female trees. Those will eventually develop into actual dates. So at this point, they're not gemar perah. So therefore, Rav says that those you can't use for an eruv. Okay. So right, they could be edible, but they're not gemar perah yet, because they're yet going to develop into ripe dates, as opposed to the ones that come from the male trees, which are never going to develop into ripe dates anyway. So therefore, this is it. This is the stage they reach, and therefore, at that point, if you're going to eat them, then this is the stage you're going to eat them. Both of them you could eat, but the difference is the ones from the male trees. They're never going to develop any further. This is their gemar perah, as opposed to the female ones usually would develop further. Okay, so the question is, Yehochi, if you're going to say that Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim are talking about the ones from the male trees, then how could Rabbi Yehuda be saying about those that they're potter from Meiser, because he's saying they're not Gemar Kri? Vahatanya, we learn in a Braisa, Amr Rabbi Yehuda. Now, like this, the earlier part of the Braisa mentions, we have the concept of beer when it comes to Shemitah. We know we have the din that food of Shemitah has Kedusha, and you have rules when you can eat it and what you can use it for and so forth. One of the rules of fruit of Shemitah is you eventually reach the point with each kind of fruit has its own time when it's kol l'chaya min asada. You have no more of it available out in the wild for wild animals to eat. At that point, we say kala l'behem tocham min habayis, you have to get rid of whatever of that fruit you have left in your house, and you have to be mevayir it. According to the Rambam, biur means that you actually have to destroy it. According to almost all the other Rishonim, it means that you just have to declare it hefker. But each fruit and vegetable has its own time for that, when there's no more of it growing wild anymore. Grapes, for example, is Pesach time. So let's say, for example, you have grapes that grew during Shemitah year, or wine that was made from them. Come Pesach of the year after Shemitah, you have to do beer on the remaining grapes or raisins or wine or whatever that you have left from Shemitah fruit. You take it, so according to everybody else other than the Rambam, and that's generally the way the halacha is paskin, is you just have to take them out of your house and declare them hefker. And then you're allowed to be zoicha in them again because they're hefker. But, then you can take it back in, yeah. Okay, the point is you have that din. Now, so we have to determine for each kind of fruit, when is it considered that it's kol l'chayim and asada? At what point do we say that there's no more available of it in the wild anymore? Now, you have, for example, with dates and with all kinds of different fruits, you have different varieties of them around. So the chachamim over there say that you can eat figs until the unripe ones of Besuni, Page Besuni, Page means unripe fruit, Besuni is the name of a place, so as long as those are still on the trees, the Chachamim say, you're allowed to eat figs of Shemitah anywhere else in Eretz Yisrael, because it's still considered that you have them available in the wild. But Amar Rav Yehuda, but Rav Yehuda says no, Loi huzkru Page Besuni ela le'inyan maisi bilvad, this Page Besuni was never mentioned in connection with beer. In fact, you have to stop eating figs at an earlier stage when there are no regular figs available anymore on the trees. You can't say as long as the Page Besoni are still on the trees, then you're still good, because those are not ripe yet. The relevance of them, why were they mentioned in halacha, is only as far as the dinim of meiser, meaning that they're chayev and meiser. And he says, so like this, Page Besoni, Bahini de Tuvina, also the unripe dates of Tuvina, which is again the name of a place, which these Ahini is another word for Kachnias, it's another word for these unripe dates from the male trees. In Tuvina, they only had male date palms, they didn't have any female ones over there, so all the trees are only producing Kachnias. And so he says, Chayav and Mamaiser. So those are Chayav and Maiser. So you see that Rabbi Yehuda, when Rabbi Yehuda is saying that Kafnias are Chayav and Maiser, so how could we say that before when we were talking the Machlokas, Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, and he says that Kafnias are Potter from Maiser, how could we say he's talking about the ones from male trees? We see over here, Tuvina has only male trees, and he says that their food is Chayav and Maiser. Ella la'olam lavin in nisach. He said, no, we're going to answer that when it comes to the machlokas of Yehuda and the Chachamim, we're not talking about nisachni, we're talking about the kafnias that come from female trees, where if you let them develop, they would eventually develop into actual dates. The reason why we're saying that the matame Tumas Ochlin, is because the difference is, like Rabbi Yochanan says in a different context, because you can make them sweet and make them edible by cooking them. So like this, when they're young, they're bitter, but you could cook them and make them edible. Therefore they can be matame and tumas ochlin even now before you do that. So the same thing as far as this machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. So when it comes to eruv, you need something which is edible right now. So the fact that you could cook it doesn't matter. Unless you actually cooked it, then you can't use it for an eruv. Meiser is similar. It's not gemar peirah, and therefore, because again, it would develop into ripe dates, and therefore it's potter from meiser. But as far as tumas ochlin, it's still going to be metame tumas ochlin because it could be made edible. The oru means fire. So what do you do with food with fire? You cook it. You cook it. You fry it. You whatever. Yeah. The heicha itmar de Rabbi Yochanan. What was the original context in which Rabbi Yochanan said his statement? It was on as follows. The Tanya, we learned in a Braisa, Shkedim Hamorim, bitter almonds, Ktanim Chayovim Gdolim Pturim, small ones are Chayav and Mice, so big ones are Potter. Now, bitter almonds, you don't usually find them in the stores nowadays. One problem with them is that bitter almonds contain cyanide, and if you eat too many of them, then you're 6 feet under. So they don't sell them nowadays anymore. It's not safe, but they do exist in the world. So when they're young, they're edible. When they're small, they're edible. When they're bigger, then they're not really edible as food anymore. Maybe they have too much of the cyanide in there. I don't know. Whatever it is, anyway. So when they're small, that's considered gmar peire, because at that point they're still sweet and edible. Only when they get bigger and they become bigger, then they're not as edible, therefore they're potter from meiser. Misrukim, on the other hand, sweet almonds, which are the regular kind that we buy in the store nowadays, it's the other way around. Gdolim chayavim, ktanim purim. The big ones, the mature ones are chayav. The small ones, which are the small ones, are potter, because they're not gmar peire yet. Continues the Braisa, Rabbi Shimon ben Rabbi Yosi, Omer Mishum Aviv, Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi, it says on the side it should be, Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi says, Mishum Aviv, in the name of his father, in the name of Rabbi Yosi, Zeh v'zeh l'ptur, both of them are potter, v'amilo zeh v'zeh l'chiyuv, and others say that what he said is both of them are chayev. What do we mean by both of them? Rashi over here explains that it means the bitter ones are potter whether they're big or whether they're small. The big ones, because already they're not edible, because they have too much of the cyanide in them. The small ones, because they're not gmar peire. As opposed to the sweet ones would be chayiv and maise when they're mature. In a different gemara in cholin, Rashi learns over there that it means that these both kinds of small ones, the sweet ones and the bitter ones, are potter. Anyway, the point is that so the question is, under almost zeb zeb chiyul amai chazi, if we say that the bitter almonds are chayev and meiser, whether they're small or whether they're large, lamai chazi. So we have to ask, what would you use the big ones for? The big ones are not edible as is. And the answer is, Amar Rav Yechanan, Hoyoveroi lematkon idei or, because you can sweeten them by cooking or frying or whatever them through fire, and therefore they can be considered food as far as Meiser and as far as Tumas Oichlin and whatever. The ones that are bitter and have cyanide in them, you could cook them or fry them or whatever, and that breaks down the chemical and makes them safety. So we see that Rav Yechanan is saying, when you have a food which right now is not edible, but you could cook it and make it edible, then it has the din. It'll be matame tumas oichlin, and therefore also that, and it'll be chayev and meiser, as long as it can be considered gmar peire, which here the mature bitter almonds are. They are mature, so they're gmar peire. So all you need is to cook them or fry them, and then you're good. On the other hand, again, when it comes to an eruv, there you have a different criteria. For eruv, it has to be something which is edible right now, and right now these bitter almonds are not edible. So therefore you couldn't use them for an eruv. So again, with the kafnias, we have a similar distinction. Kafnias are not edible right now unless you cook them. Therefore, you can't use them for an eruv. On the other hand, you could cook them and make them edible, and therefore they can be matamei tumas oichlin, and therefore we have a machlokas whether they're chayiv and meiser or not. That's based on the question: do we consider it gmar peire or not? Again, when we have the ones that come from the male trees, that is as far as they're going to develop, so they could be considered gmar peire. Okay. So we'll stop over here and we'll continue tomorrow, Rav Hashem. So it's not cyanide itself, but it's a chemical that contained. The body will break it down into cyanide. You look it up. You look up almonds on Wikipedia. You'll find a thing about bitter versus. Oh, because practically speaking, you probably had enough people ate bitter almonds and died from it that you realize after a while that they have a naturally bitter taste to them. The bitterness doesn't come from the cyanide itself. The bitterness comes from some other chemical in them. But it could be, practically speaking, they're very bitter, and therefore most people wouldn't eat them. The Gemara just says that's bitter. Now, they're called shedim amorim. They're bitter almonds. But the point is, the bitterness itself put most people off them. Yeah. Okay. This is also true. Okay, everyone.